Coming to you from across the planet via Anchor FM, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other listening platforms where podcasts are heard. Welcome, everyone, to the Dan Morrow Show. I am Dan Morrow. With me today, standing a considerable distance away from me, is my good friend Sam Seitel. I'm going to let him explain what he does because he's got his hands in a lot of different projects. He's done it all. He's done a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of stuff, and he's here with me today. I was honored to be on his show, The Pillars of Hammonton, and now he's here with me. Welcome to the show.
Ooh, what an introduction that I've done everything.
Yeah.
That's an introduction, brother.
Well, you've done a lot.
Thank you.
You've done, what did you, you've done pro wrestling.
Brother, you've had Tommy Chong on the show. I mean, am I following Tommy Chong right now?
You are following, I'm trying to think of the...
one of your A-listers on here or something.
The list. After Tommy Chong, we had Bob Cowsill from the Cowsills. And then, I think, and Manny Martis.
All right, well,
good
listen,
buddy Manny.
Dude, you were mentioning before we even started that you do get nervous before doing shows and, mm-hmm. and entertainment. Mm-hmm. Even after all these years, but you still have to win over the crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I've got a high stack to reach. I got some big stars, so I got to bring it, dude.
No,
maybe not. No. I don't know.
Dude,
you have to understand. I've been with kids for 6 months.
I know.
Yeah, I mean that's what I do. I love it. I also love hanging out with adults too, especially cool people like you. So this isn't just a recording to me. This is like a play date, brother.
It is. It's been a while. How have you been?
Let's get real.
Well, this is the reason why you're here. Cause we're going to get real.
It's going to be therapeutic.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're both from the entertainment cloth. So when we're on, we have to be on. Smiles, you know, good, you know, everything's happy, everything's good, everything's positive. And then something like this hits, and it hits home. And you go through a roller coaster ride of emotions that is unlike any other. And this is totally unprecedented to anything we've ever experienced in history. In just the history of this country, and definitely in the history of my existence, and when you've made your living, and everything, you've been told to stop working, stop doing what you love, stop doing everything, and I tried to get you to come onto the show, and I think you were in a bit of a funk, and I think the key was. That made me definitely want you even more during that time because, and I put it, how great would it be to see Anthony Robbins pissed off or really mad or just really in a funk? It's his job to always be on.
Tony Robbins.
Tony Robbins.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to always be on.
Wait, is Anthony like Tony?
Same
is
guy.
Same thing. Okay, okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. He was Anthony Robbins when he first started and then became Tony Robbins, but it's just been
all right. Tony Robbins kind of rolls off the tongue,
yeah.
But you're comparing me to this motivational speaker, huh?
and his logo is actually, I think, A something R or something for Anthony Robbins. But he's just one of those guys who, yeah, he always has to be on, always has to, you know, give a smile. He's the one that has to give you hope. And what happens when he has those days? When he doesn't have hope. And there have been many days in his life when he's been down. And I thought that was a side of you that I'd want to see. It was real. It was genuine.
I always get thrown off hearing stuff like that. I've heard it before that I seem like this ultra positive guy, like this super, like, let's go, let's have fun, happy guy.
Well, let me get a water real quick.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But man, there's been some serious things that have hit me. And, you know, for selfish reasons, like, you're in front of an audience all the time. You get these cheers. I keep thinking about what I miss the most. You ever hear of, like, people have different languages of love that they like receiving from people? Mm-hmm. Well, to me, for whatever reason, like, I love getting positive affirmations and just hearing positivity, feeling positivity from people. And I used to be able to go downstairs from my house. I live at the school, people. It's,
right.
It's a lifestyle. And I go downstairs and I hear, Mr. Sam, from this chorus of kids. And I go to the next room, Mr. Sam. And everyone's so happy to hear me. And I get to go on and make their day somehow. And I've been without that for a long time, man. And yeah. I started to question myself even, like, maybe because I've done it for so long, like, am I, this sounds so stupid, man, but like, am I even like a still a good teacher? Am mm-hmm. I even a still a good podcaster? Was I ever a good podcaster? Was I ever as good of a teacher as I want to be or thought I was, you know? Just a lot of self-doubt after day, just not doing it, I guess, and not knowing what's next in my life.
There's a science called, I forget the actual science of it, but it's a theory, and I don't know exactly what the word is, but it's the fear of feeling like you're a fraud all the time.
Yes. I need even to find out that good, term.
Because some things come so easy, you know, and it's something that is pointed out to a lot of entrepreneurs and self-business owners. It's one of those things. It's a fear of being called out as a fraud. You know, I can go and I'm charging a certain amount of money that I feel I'm worth, and I'm playing songs, but sooner or later they're gonna realize, oh, he's a fraud, because for me, it's a talent that came easy. And I feel like sooner or later, the curtain's going to be pulled out. You know, they're going to open the veil, you know, see the man behind the curtain and realize that I'm just a sham and that I shouldn't be charging what I was worth. And that fear keeps a lot of people from going that extra mile and putting that, you know, value on themselves, because for them it is something that comes to them naturally, easy at times. There was a lot of work to get to this point, but once you're at that point, you can really mail it in sometimes. Mm-hmm. And there's that fear that you might be exposed as a fraud. And when you lose, when you're doing it and you're riding the wave, and then all of a sudden that wave is taken from you, now you question yourself, do I have what it takes to get it back, to get that momentum back? Did I ever have what it takes to get that momentum back? You know, or had I been just a fraud riding that great wave? And that being said, there are certain highs that come with it. You know, the adulation of people that really appreciate what you do. And even on a bad day, a highlight from doing what you love can make your day. You had a horrible morning, you slept bad, the coffee was bitter, or something's just not right, and then you go into that classroom, hey, Mr. Sam! And that just wakes you up, but now it doesn't happen. Nope. And for me, it went twofold. I was getting anxiety that, oh my God, I'm never going to work again. And then I was getting the anxiety, oh my God, I'm eventually going to have to work again.
Were you thinking that you might have to work in jobs that...
No. The fact that in my mind, doing the shows that I do, and I'm grateful for them, and I love them, but it was never the goal. Hmm. That was the step to get to the next goal, to make records, to be on, you know, on the radio, to be in the business, you know, to get on that another pay level. And when you're making thousands a night instead of hundreds a night, you know, that next level, even as a background musician or a studio player or a producer.
Can I ask you like a probably a tough question?
No.
How do you feel if you don't get that, like, do you feel like you've failed at something? Can you look back and see how many people you've entertained and the skills you've developed and that you get to do cool stuff all the time and be like, well, that's pretty rad.
Well, I'll answer that in a second. 'Cause I'm happy now where I am, you know, settling for what I do, but now I don't even have that.
Mm.
Now, that being said, for the longest time, it haunted me. I needed to be, you know, there was a reason. Everything I've ever wanted to be, all those reasons are gone or irrelevant anymore. Mm. My greatest dream was to play the vet. Vet's gone. Veterans Stadium. That's gone.
All right, yeah.
How about a night at the Spectrum?
Is that also gone?
Spectrum's gone. Okay. Grammys, awards are irrelevant to me. They don't mean nothing to me. So, you know, and I wanted to have a Grammy to give to my grandma, you know, and she passed away 15, 16, 20 years ago. Yeah. And at some point you realize I have a home, I have a beautiful wife, I have a cool car. That was kind of part of the package deal of being a rock star in a way. So I have everything I wanted, but am I doing it enough for the people? Am I giving them what they like? And I had a really bad time once where I was down. I mean, really, it was one of my darkest times.
You're talking about within the last month or so?
No, this is years ago.
Oh, okay.
Years ago, I had such a dark time, you know, where, you know, I might want to shut the lights off and just end it. And I was.
Is it because of what's happened? What was happening? Or?
Well, my life was just one of the things Tony Robbins says, bringing his name up, is what causes discomfort is a lack of certainty, and that's really the bottom line to everything. It's just certainty. If you told me we're going to shut down for 6 months, but certainly be back open this date, this time. Fine.
Let's party for 6 months.
But you said we're only going to shut down for 2 weeks. And maybe two more weeks or another week, another 14 days. That was in March. You know, it's July now. And there's uncertainty. With that, you get uneasy. You get unsettledness. You know, I don't think... You know, the riots and the protests and stuff. How many riots would there be? You know, this also looked like people who've been told by the government to stay home for 3 months, and they're just letting off steam. How much of that is just letting off steam and just saying,
"Oh,
enough"?
That's what it was.
You know, had we had internet, had we not had internet, would we have shut down? So, but there's a certainty and an uncertainty.
So is that
causes you to have different reactions. I was at a part where I was so uncertain of stuff in my future, and I was so unhappy. I remember just crying on the bed and just about to doze off. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm just about to doze off. This is years ago. And all of a sudden, right as I'm about to dream, I'm dreaming of me on a hill at a campfire in the desert with a shaman in front of me. And he says, "You heal with your voice." And it was as if he was right there beside the bed in my face, because I heard it in the room, and it woke me up. And I was like, okay, That's all I needed to know. Whether it's, and so it's whether it's music or these podcasts, whatever, I heal with my voice. I'll accept that. Even if it was just a conjuring of my own imagination, I'm going to accept that. So if I'm doing a show and I don't feel like I'm connecting, or I feel like I should be connecting more, or I'm being ungrateful of the situation, I just hear that voice again. You heal with your voice. You know, if I feel like I should be doing a $10,000 job in a 10,000-seat arena, and I'm at a restaurant with four people, I hear that voice. You heal with your voice. And 99% of the time, it was worth it, because the four people there are there because across the street from where I play is a hospital. And they were there because their father just had a stroke or something. And they came to me and they're just like, I don't know what it is. You played all his songs. You just made our night. Job done. And when you don't have that, then you go through the roller coasters. And I had roller coasters, man.
Yeah.
You know, these past several months.
I saw you, man. I saw you, you know, you did your live streams. You did one for the art show that I was hosting.
Mm-hmm.
And like.
And I didn't want to do it.
You didn't want to do it, huh?
I didn't want to play. I was in such a funk.
I saw it on your face. I didn't know if you wanted to play or not. I thought you wanted to play, but I also saw, you know, the sadness. I think everyone did. I mean, you're a very real guy, man. You wear your heart on your sleeve. It's like, it didn't feel uncomfortable. It felt very comfortable, but it felt very real, you know?
Yeah.
That's what people said. It felt very real, that they like felt for you. They felt what you were feeling. It's not even like you were singing sad songs or anything, no. Man, but it was just, you could tell that you're a happy guy, that you're an entertainer. The way you were speaking, you were comfortable. But man, you could, the way you looked when you said, these are dead times. I don't know if you remember saying that. I said, these are some hard times. You're like, these are some dead times.
They're dead times.
And I was like, damn.
It was horrifying. You know, I was looked at as a musician, and I'm looked at as an artist. But in reality, I'm a self-employed businessman making a living as music, you know, doing music. I got no assistance. There's no something, nothing from the state, nothing, you know. So there's no income coming. I'm not bringing in any income. I'm not getting any assistance. I'm not getting any
aid.
Us
too, man. Us too.
Yeah. So.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
And this is just how I feel, and I don't know how you feel at the moment or how other people feel, but I grew up wanting to be a pro wrestler, and I became one. But what I grew up watching was Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold, big WWE champions, famous people I idolized. It's the same with rock and roll. Mm-hmm. All you ever see, really, are the people who make it onto the late night shows, or the people who are in the top 10 and these big names. So that's what you have to compare yourself to, when in reality, there are thousands, more than thousands of bands and musicians out there who are nowhere near as successful as someone like you is, who are able to just go show after show, year after year, and just keep a career going. And not only keep the career going, but build up your skills to a point where you're able to do a really good podcast and basically probably do any kind of speaking gig if anyone asked you, because you're so skillful in these things. I think that you are successful, and that's from my own personal thing. Am I a successful pro wrestler? No. But was I when I was wrestling? If I think back, I was like, yeah, I was. And everything that I got from that pro wrestling experience, I take with me today. Just like I can tell everything you've taken in rock and roll, you bring it with you in every conversation you have, or every video you do. And I think that's success, man. And in reality, you see these rock stars who, quote unquote, are successful. 9 times out of 10, you find out they're not even happy and that they're stressed out the entire time.
I saw bands that were signed at the time when I wanted to be signed, and I see where they are now.
Mm. Dude, when
and I'm grateful.
Yes. When I went to pro wrestling school and I could not wait to meet the guys that I grew up watching, let me tell you, and this is 99% of them were so disappointing, and almost, they were almost bullies. because they had been big and now they're here with these new aspirational wrestlers. And I guess they're just unhappy. So they treated us like garbage.
Right.
It was just a sad, sad scene, you know?
And it was so selective. You know, for me, I got to compete with the 1,000 other bands out there, the million other bands out there who want to be in the top 10 of all great band of the greatest bands of all time. And, you know, it filters down in that way. But in wrestling, there's only one Hulk. Mm. There's only one Rock. You have the other, you know, I put them as B-list guys, you know, your Senna's and all these other guys, but they're, it was not their profession so much as their drive. Nobody's got a drive like Dwayne Johnson.
Nobody does. It's also
nobody has a drive like John Cena. Nobody has, you know, yeah. Hogan was at the right place at the right time. I remember when that just blew up. And it was up to Roddy Piper to build his to parlay that. What are you going to do with that? You know, what's the Sheik going to do with that? You guys are in the spotlight now. What can you guys do to, you know, acquiesce that opportunity to become even better? When The Rock was out, you had a whole bunch of other, it was a whole nother generation of wrestlers out there now. And they were all taking the spotlight. You know, you had
Stone Cold. Stone Cold was the big one.
You had Stone Cold. You had the
Triple H, The Rock, Mick Foley, Bret Hart, Mick Shawn Foley. Michaels.
Yeah, he's the one I'm thinking about. But something happened with decisions they made, choices they made, situations they were in, where they didn't take it as far as The Rock did. Maybe they wanted to have another show. Maybe they got a little too greedy. Maybe this happened, you know, but whatever happened, they made it. They became successful wrestlers. Mm. There's dolls with their names on them, their faces on them. But what does it take, especially in Vince McMahon's world? What does it take for you to get your own identity? Mm.
Especially nowadays, it is
because he owns
hard.
You, and sure he does. Owns your identity. He owns your name.
Sure does.
So is Hogan going to go and just go as Terry Bollea? I think
Terry Bollea. I think
Terry yeah. Bollea.
I'm shocked by your wrestling knowledge, my man. Dude, you should just watch one of my matches or something, dude.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing. I love the whole performance of it. Because as much as people could say, oh, this was fake and this was all set up and this is rigged. And
Which is true.
You cannot deny the athleticism in these guys that kill themselves for the night, pack up and do it again in Cleveland, yes. Pack up and do it the next night in Saskatchewan. You know,
it's a hard life.
It's a hard life. And that's something that I'm sure all these wrestlers wish they had that opportunity again, because they would do it. They would do something different. they would try something, because now they're beat up. Their knees. You know, I think Hogan is actually shorter now, a few inches shorter because of all the compression in his spine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all these guys are hurting. Physically,
Undertaker just retired, man, and he is a mess. But man, did he make it best character of all time?
What right did there. It for you? What was it that said, Mom?
Oh,
I'm gonna be Hulk Hogan. You know what?
You want to know when it all started? From the first match I saw, I was a little kid who got picked on, man. But all of a sudden, these two guys came out with their arms flinging up. Little team called the Bushwhackers. You ever hear of them? Mm-hmm. Bushwhackers come out and they're facing these two guys who are way bigger than them. At the time, I knew no different. Now I know they were jobbers. They were whatever Bushwhackers were meant to go over. But to me, these jobbers, these two big guys, were gonna kill the Bushwhackers. And when the Bushwhackers beat them with the battering ram, I ran right up to my mom. I'm like, I gotta do this. And she's like, it's fake. And I'm like, what? But I was cool with that. And from that moment on, I mean, for about 15 years, completely obsessed. like.
And did you end up going to a school?
Yeah, I went to pro wrestling school when I was 18. That was kind of like a deal. Like if I did really good in high school.
Where was that?
That was in Tampa with a guy named Steve Kern. Who, if you looked him up, he's been all over the place. He used to be Skinner in WWE and Doink the Clown at one point. So yeah, I trained with him, and he gave me so much confidence, man. He let me know, he told me from his opinion that I had what he called the it factor, where he said that if I went out and I did my entrance the way I did and I spoke the way I did, that I would get people's attention. And I never believed that. And when Steve Kern said it to me, I was like, well, maybe he doesn't say this to many other people. Maybe he didn't say it to anyone else. He said it about me in front of everyone. And something about that moment, him telling me I had the it factor, whether it translated into wrestling or the or just me teaching my students, or being here on the Dan Morrow show, it's like, it changed my entire life. It made me confident, which is so much, which is what I try to pass on to my students, is to give them the same confidence that Steve Kern gave to me.
Now, I travel in the winter months. I play up in Rhode Island. So on my way there, I go through Connecticut. And just off the road is the headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been there?
I haven't been there, no. I've seen it on videos.
You just drive by and you see the large WWE.
Yeah.
Is that what it is now?
Yeah, you should absolutely, if you get a chance, and if you're listening, even if you're not a wrestling fan, check out the Money in the Bank, because they can't wrestle in a ring in an audience. So they had an entire match in that building, going through the elevators onto the roof. Money in the Bank, it was so good. But that's how I saw the whole office, mm-hmm. through a wrestling match. They went into Vince McMahon's office and like almost got fired, and then he like sanitizes his hands when the wrestlers leave. It was great, man. But I became bitter about the business for a while. I left and I stopped watching, and suddenly my kids wanted to learn a thing or two about it. And now in the last like 6 months, I am like all in. I want to get back in there. I'm not allowed to. My wife won't let me.
No, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. Yeah, that's a lot of just.
I've had
do
a lot
CrossFit,
of
man.
Oh God!
just do something.
It's a different kind of rush, brother.
I know. I can't imagine. You know, and I think that's one of the downfalls of it, because I've done shows where I've landed on my knees, and you know I shouldn't. I have Osgood
doing
Slaughter's.
Power slides. What are you doing?
Yeah, just slide across on your knees with the microphone or something, and you know I got bad tendonitis in my knee. I got Osgood Slaughter. But the adrenaline, you don't feel it.
You don't feel a thing.
And when the crowd's going and you're going, you'll set yourself on fire.
I was just
going
to say, I've done everything, Dan Morrow. I've taken the chairs, gone through the fire, gone through the tables, jumped off the steel cage. I've done it all. I don't think I felt a thing in that ring ever.
No.
Do I kind of feel it now sitting here? Sure do. Something after 35, exactly. Man, I was like, oh, all the veterans were right. This is starting to really hurt.
Well, how are your knees? What hurts the most?
I would say back. Back is off and on.
Do you get spasms?
No, it's just like a lingering, annoying pain that it just happened towards the end of my wrestling career. Where it just gets annoying, you know? Yeah. Luckily, I got out. Like, I mean, some of these guys do this. My old tag partner, he's in it. He's been in it for 20 years now. I ask him all the time, like, how you feeling, brother? But yeah, I feel it, but I'm okay, you know?
Yeah.
These guys who do it 20, 25, 30 years, Undertaker, I mean, he's getting his knees drilled every year, you know? I think I was completely obsessed, like I said, and I got to do cool things. I won the NWA Tag Championship, which was kind of a big deal for me. I got to meet all the heroes, who turned out not to be, a lot of them not to be heroes. But what I got from the pro wrestling business is, it's immeasurable. It's changed my whole life. I thought I wanted to be a wrestler. I think I'm much happier with what the skills I picked up there, doing what I did 6 months ago. And when I'm going to start again on Monday.
Did you ever see the Steve Jobs commencement speech for Stanford?
No.
I recommend you do. It's about 11 minutes long. And he talks about connecting the dots and how he went to college. He convinced his parents to pay a lot of money for him to go to this college. And then he dropped out of what he was majoring in and decided to take all the littler courses that seemed interesting to him. Mm. And he's saying, you never know how the dots are going to line up until after time passes. So he finds himself in a calligraphy class, and he's learning about different lettering styles and the different structures and how things are spaced and how beautiful everything is written. And that's something that he really loved. He loved, and it's something that his father taught him. Well, he's adopted, but his adopted father would teach him all these little things. You know, I'm going to make something. I'll make it out of wood, and it's going to go against the wall. But I'm going to make sure the back side of it that nobody's ever going to see is just as beautiful as the front. And I'm going to put that kind of quality into it. And he loved how he would go along the campus and see everything just beautifully lettered. And he just always kept that in the back of his brain. And then when it came to design the Mac, he thought it would be really good that inside the Mac, if you opened it up, the first Macintosh, etched in it are all the autographs, all the names of everybody who worked on it. Hmm. You know, that kind of beauty. And when it came to word publishing, he's thinking, I can't just have a computer print the letter A. I need fonts. It needs to have, you know, everything he learned in calligraphy, in his calligraphy classes, he used in the Apple. So that's why when you first pulled up an Apple and pulled up a Macintosh, you had all these different letters and fonts and sans serifs and, you know, all these different types of things. And he jokes, he says, and because of that, we have word publishing, and this became a big thing. We'd never have this had I not taken those classes. And since Windows copies everything I do, none of us would have anything. It was just really...
I wonder if his teacher knows. That his teacher should know. His calligraphy teacher?
I don't know.
Definitely
But it's such a great speech that he gives about connecting dots. You just never know. And you've done your wrestling career. What good did it do you? You're not doing it anymore. But you don't have to do the wrestling to be able to utilize everything you've learned from it. Mm. So that's where it all paid off for you, you know, and with everybody. You know, for you, it took wrestling, it took these courses, and you wouldn't make certain decisions here or there had you not learned these things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My favorite time to put these to use are during the, besides telling stories to my students. You know, I know how to work a crowd and get them excited and get them feeling anxious, what's going to happen next. But man, when I get to do a show in front of my campers and it's something dumb like Counselor Pie Face and the most popular counselor is getting cheered, you know, he's like a 19-year-old kid and I get to turn total heel and just get everyone booing me and going crazy, but it's like they love to hate me, you know, because we're all close anyway. It's like from wrestling, I know how to turn it on and get people to boo as loud as they can, you know, or cheer as loud as they can.
You know how to entertain, and I think there's nothing that wrestling does more than teach you how to sell stuff.
Mm.
You know, and I think that was a term that they used.
I'm shocked that you know these things, man. You keep saying words. I'm like, how does he know that word?
You know, you got to sell it. Make it look good. You know, if I'm okay, I'm going to throw you against the wall, but you got to sell it. You got to look like I'm
right. Like if I were to wrestle some Joe Schmo off the street and he threw a punch at me, I might sell it a little bit depending on his size. Mm-hmm. But if I got punched and I got to work Macho Man Randy Savage, he punched me, I'm going flying over the top ropes.
Right.
You sell for that man.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And you sell for those kids. Mm. And it's put you back in the entertainment industry in a strange way, because what you started to do, which is I think something that you and I both are like on the verge of doing, it's just with no work in sight. I know you're going to get your school back in
camp starts in 2 days, 3 days.
And I got a few shows lined up. So it's there. It's there. There's light at the end of the tunnel. Still may be a train, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. We're reinventing ourselves. And you were putting out these videos.
Talking about Blueberry Kids?
I'm talking about the Blueberry Kids.
Yeah, I was. Talk about connecting the dots.
Because you got to do something.
Got to do something.
And you're entertaining, and you just...
Well, there's also the fact that, like, my students, what are they going to do? Am I able to... There's no way I can do a live video stream with four-year-olds. That's never going to work. And I could give parents work to do at home. That's great. But, like, I also have my own kids. I also have my own day to fill. So the whole Blueberry Kids thing has become... something that really taught my kids and myself, but more importantly, my kids a lot, whether it be about filmmaking or acting or ever since then, man, we watch a movie and they're like, wait, was that a stunt double there? Mm. Or, you know, they ask right. all these questions that now they're realizing behind the scenes stuff, which is pretty cool, you know? Like they were saying, we watched Sandlot the other day and okay. they realized it was movie magic, how they made that dog look like a monster at the beginning of the movie. Mm. They looked at me and they're like, he's not really that big, right? You know, so and it's also given them confidence that they can speak in front of a camera and all their friends are going to message them later saying how much fun they had watching the episode. It was a fun project, dude. And yeah, we had to do something, you know.
You got to do something.
So connecting the dots, man, communications, taking my filmmaking class, connected all the way to that.
Yeah, and you utilize everything to that moment, you know. Some people are taught survival techniques. You know, these are our survival techniques. You know, it's a way that we could still probably survive, make a small living, not starve. Mm. You know, it might not get us hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions or not even 10,000, but it can get us something to just
keep it going.
Keep it going. Exactly.
Yeah. So what about you, man? Like, what are the plans? What are you hoping for?
You know what? I was so conflicted, and I still am, and I'm going through... It's really easy to go in the blame game and say it's because of you that my life is screwed up right now, but I know enough within myself that I could only do that so much. You know, people... You know, I've always had an obstacle in front of me for something. So why is this stopping me now? So I've done a lot of soul searching. Is this something I want to do? Mm. You know, I didn't know if I wanted to continue music at the beginning of the year. You know, I wanted this to be a great year, but one of my goals was to make more, singing less, and just to do something maybe different. And I'm thinking of all those people out there that would love to do something different, but they have to work, and you can't jeopardize not working. And now the universe has put it in a way where, boom, okay, now you're not working. Here's your opportunity.
Mm, yeah.
Okay, you can keep blaming and keep saying it's everyone else's fault and keep doing something, but you have technology, and that's the thing I had to do. I had to start making a list. What do I have? I have all my faculties. I have all my limbs. I can move. I can walk. I have all my capabilities. I have a car. I have technology. What do I know about this technology? I can make films. I can make videos. I can make podcasts. I can make music. Now, taking it from there and taking it, that next step is what will hurt you. Because is this going to be a waste of my time?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I go for it and try to do it? And I hear that voice that... I hear this voice in my head that says, you were making a great living just playing the guitar at a time when there were a million other guitar players in South Jersey, in this area. And you were smoking them all with a great living. You were headlining casinos. You had a steady gig, the same room for 20 years. You know, so the odds are really against you. That, what are the odds that that would work? You know,
very slim.
So if I can do that, then I can venture into something else. And one of the things I started to do was this podcast show in hopes of getting a show done, getting some sponsors, and then building from there. and seeing where that can go. And also going back to the documentaries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if I told you. I probably did when I was on the Pillars with you.
About your docs?
Yeah, well, yeah, you knew, man, about the paranormal documentary.
Uh-huh.
But I started to, you know, I got to be different. And I figure I put my pants on just like everybody else so I don't get starstruck. So if someone's going to put a podcast show out, a music show, they'll get their friends who play guitar and stuff. They do a comedy show, they'll find their friends that do comedy and stuff. Well, I want to find Tommy Chong. I want to get someone who inspired me. I want to get Bobby Rydell. How about Gary Puckett?
How did you get Tommy Chong, man?
I asked him.
Oh, all right. You didn't have your agent go through his agent, right?
I went through his agent.
Okay.
I went through his agent.
Because, I mean, he was on, like, Joe Rogan, like, last month, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, like, the number one podcast.
So he... I made a wish list. If I could have... it might even be on here. Here's one of the list things I had. Okay, and I had a bunch of people on here. One of the guys I wanted the most, I didn't even put his name down because I figured he wouldn't give me the time of day. And that was an astronaut, Story Musgrave.
You got him, though.
I got him. And I just asked. You know, I'll write a list of 80 people and go down that list. And the first thing I do is, because Wayne Gretzky says you'll miss 100% of the shots you never take.
Yeah.
So if the worst you're going to get is no. Mm. And give yourself such an insurmountable list of people that the word no doesn't even mean anything anymore because you have 50 more people you got to contact. So
what was it like?
First thing I do is call. I'll just get the website.
Yeah. Okay.
Do they have a contact? You know, see if they have a website or a social media page that I can send something on. I sent a request to Tommy Chong. He had a contact thing, so I clicked it. His agent called me back, his business manager, and said, we'd like to hear more about what you're doing. So I told him. I told him how relevant I felt he still was and how much I still loved him. And, you know, it's freaking Cheech and Chong, man. So he sent me another email. It says, Tommy loves helping the startups. You know, and young guys and stuff. He That's loves awesome. Doing that. Okay. He isn't going to talk about anything. Like, he's just going to talk. So if you have a list of questions or something, you know, don't go too crazy, but he's just going to talk. Don't worry. I said, I'm not. So I figured I'd get him on for a good 5 minutes. If I can just get him on for a good 5 minutes, I can have a good intro, have him, and then I can tell some stories of my own personal experience, how much I love Cheech and Chong and stuff like that. And had him on for the longest interview I've ever had.
How long was it?
It was over an hour and 14 minutes.
You got an hour and 14 out of him.
An hour and 14 out of him, and it was phenomenal. And I just didn't care. At this point, I'm not at his caliber of celebrity, but I've put just as much years and mileage into my own career. So we were two seasoned veterans, but, you know, he's obviously a legend. I'm not, but I felt like I deserved to be able to talk to him.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And I did. So.
And dude, after all the radio station 5 minutes, ba-boo, ba-boo interviews I'm sure he's done over the years, or you don't even get anything out of him. To be able to sit down or just wherever he was, talk to a dude like you for an hour and 15 minutes, it's probably fun for him.
Oh, and I love long format.
It's the best.
I absolutely love long format. And so I made a list. Tommy Chong, Story Musgrave, Robbie Knievel, because I love Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
And I contacted Robbie Knievel.
Wait, who's Rob? Is that his son?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, look, watch some of his jumps.
Oh, I was just going to ask, is his son crazy like he was?
Yeah, watch some of his jumps. He jumped in ATCO.
Yeah?
Yeah, in...
I had no idea Evel Knievel's son's doing the thing.
He did a jump in ATCO. Let's see. I think that's it.
Ooh, all right. These guys are... Whoa. Oh, yeah. Gee, is that him? Is that him cartwheeling through the air? Oh, that's right here in Jersey, 1991. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and I wanted to go... I played that night. So it was like really upsetting that I wasn't able to see it.
So, that's
so
right
he
there.
Jumps. Yeah, this is Robbie.
Oh! Oh, he slid about 4 feet on his butt.
Yeah, he's got all asphalt in his butt and everything. He's grabbing it.
Oh, no. You want to be like your dad,
He's just as crazy.
Oh, what?
Job
well done, sir.
Just as crazy. And wound up following that jump, going back to ATCO, and doing it successful.
Oh, okay. All right.
Jumped the Grand Canyon.
Oh, you can do that, huh?
He jumped the Grand Canyon.
He jumped the Grand Canyon. All right.
Not in a sky cycle either. On a cycle, he found the smallest little part that was jumpable. Jumped it. Crazy.
You love that stuff, huh, man?
Oh, my God. It was Evel Knievel. I have a scar right here from Evel
Knievel. I see that. I wanted to ask you about that.
4 years old, man, running around the apartment on Bellevue Avenue in Hamilton, and I ran into the bathroom running around like, pretending I had a little motorcycle. I'm just running around with my arms extended going, rah, rah. My dad's shaving. And I go, rah, and I scare him. He goes, get the hell out of here. So I go and I run around the corner. I trip and I hit the corner of a door.
Oh, dude, it looks like your lip was split.
It was
like
split.
In half.
It was split. There's it, all the way through.
Do you remember it?
Yeah.
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 Is that like first memory or something?
That's I totally remember that, man.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember seeing the door come and my recollection is I'm seeing this door come in slow motion, the corner of this doorway, and then it's black, and then you see the cartoon stars. I remember screaming. I remember being in the hospital. They're trying to restrain me.
Oh, my God.
I remember them giving me needles, and I remember the sound I'm making as my eyes are watering. I remember seeing my eyes water. So...
Poor little Dan Morrow.
So, oh, man. My childhood in 1976, 5, 6, and 7, 75, 76, 77, was the best time to be alive ever.
Oh.
All four Beatles were still alive. Elvis was still alive. And all my heroes had outlandish outfits, and most of them were real. Evel Knievel.
Right, yeah. He had that big white with like, kind of like the stars and the glitter.
I had the Bionic Man, the $6 million man. And then just at 77, we got Star Wars. And oh my God, it was phenomenal. So yeah, Robbie Knievel.
That was a good time, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Robbie Knievel, got to talk to him. I put a message out, you know, I'd like to have you for an interview. I get a response. He's not doing interviews. When are you doing your next documentary? I'm like, what's going on here?
What?
And then I saw the name, said Warren Croyle. And he's the distributor, just by chance, of the paranormal documentaries I used to do.
What?
And I said, dude, I don't have any gear. I don't have a camera. I have nothing. He said, well, get a camera. Get some lights. And I'm thinking, could I? Should I? And I'm still getting royalties from videos I made back in, you know,
really?
10 years ago. Yeah. And some are substantial. Some are
really
decent. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, a couple hundred here and
dude. You know, yeah. That's awesome.
And they're going on video on demand. So I figured, you know, maybe I'll start the documentaries again, and I can do that. So these are all the things I'm thinking about that I can reinvent myself with.
Have you been in touch with them since then? Are you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do a documentary about a character that you love or that his father, man, that's huge.
Well, I'm going to be doing I'd love to have him as a podcast. I think Robbie's doing some kind of documentary. I don't even know if I can talk about it.
Oh, okay.
But he's doing something already. I got two documentaries lined up that I'm going to start working on.
Are you allowed to talk about them?
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm going to do UFOs during the Eisenhower years.
Oh.
And because just at the beginning of his term, Truman leaves office. It's the end of the war. Now the 50s come. And Eisenhower takes over. He's doing his thing. And by the end of his term, his whole farewell speech discusses how we've wound up creating a military-industrial complex.
I've heard that speech.
And they're just as powerful, and we can't let them get that kind of power anymore. And somehow he lost power. Something that he should be on top of slipped through his fingers. And that became the military-industrial complex. And I'm going to discuss how UFOs intertwined with that. And then...
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and then my other one's going to be on the afterlife and near-death experiences.
Whoa.
Something like that. Something.
What made you decide to do that?
It's something I want to know about.
Yeah. Yeah, the people who say they see the light when they die for a few seconds.
And I know there's hospitals now that have taken it serious to the point where people say they leave their body and they're overlooking the room. And
it sounds like it's a very consistent story amongst everyone who's experienced this.
Yeah. And now hospitals are starting to take it serious and have put things like the highest ledge. If you died in the kitchen or something, picture the operating room and picture these large refrigerators or something, these big cabinets with blood or something in it. You know, on top of it, they have logos and symbols so that you can only see if you've left your body or you're hovering.
Oh, ho, ho.
So they want to know if you've
seen that logo.
Do you recall seeing this, or what numbers do you remember?
That would be awesome.
So that's the stuff I want to get into. And,
yeah.
And this is stuff that's going to consume time, but...
You going to be able to get the equipment and everything?
I got the camera.
Oh, look
I
at
bought
that.
The lights.
Looking good. Yeah.
These lights are, I'm showing him a set of studio lights I got. They change colors, so that I got one under here giving it this purple look.
Yes, looking nice over there. Are you thinking about interviewing them during the documentary, like you'll be the interviewer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do some interviews. And now, you know, it's been 3 or 4 months with the COVID and everything, the lockdown, the quarantine. So it's going to be hard to talk to people, but out of nowhere, we got Zoom. And you can record off of Zoom.
Yeah.
So now I can use that. You know, this is one of those things again. You know, if we didn't have internet, would we have locked down?
Yeah.
How many more people?
Can you imagine how different it would be?
Yeah. So I'm just trying to reinvent myself. Just with the podcasts, with this, with the documentaries. And that's where we started talking about when we got on the topic of Tommy Chong and stuff. He was just one of the lists.
Yeah. Were you starstruck? Not starstruck?
Not at all.
Yeah, just talking with a guy.
Yeah, I think Story Musgrave was the one that really got to me. That, you know, I didn't want to offend him or upset him in any way because he scared me.
Why? Who is he? I don't know. Story Musgrave?
He's an astronaut. He flew on all the shuttles. He's the Hubble. They launched the Hubble in outer space, the Hubble telescope. $1 billion project. Takes pictures of the universe. Comes back. They're all blurry. How do we fix this? Now, the Hubble is like a bottle. It's just this tube with this huge mirror in it. You can't take the mirror out. You can't do anything. So they realized that the mirror itself was grounded so fine, but like within a hair width, like the width of a person's hair, just slightly off, and that caused a blur. So how do you fix that when you're in space? And their solution was, we'll get a bunch of other mirrors out of focus to put it in focus, and we'll just stick them alongside the cylinder of the telescope itself.
So they're bouncing the image off
each
other?
Just to bounce off and to give a focus.
And that's how It worked.
Yeah. So how do we do this now? So Story Musgrave came up with these ideas and worked with a team in NASA. And okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do this and do this. And I guess I'm going to have to spacewalk and fly out to, you know, by myself and just float to Hubble and put these in.
Yeah, let's take a little trip out to Hubble.
So he takes the shuttle and they get to the Hubble telescope and they open the bay doors of the shuttle and they're able to capture it. And he just flies out there and floats along and he's hooking things up and just crazy
stuff.
Why
were you intimidated by this guy?
Oh, because just he's such a force. He's such a personality. You know, I asked him questions and I didn't know how many questions I'd be able to ask him. So I just went with what I usually call my final five in an interview, which is...
Now I've experienced the final five on my show.
Yeah. So I said, you get mad or do you get even? And there's like nothing. Silence.
Oh boy.
Neither.
Oh.
I'm like, this is someone I want to talk to. Because I'm at the point now where I want to choke people. I want to throw things. And, you know, I'm very mad and I want to get very even. And, you know, so that's why I ask these questions. Because obviously if someone like him is saying neither and someone else is saying, I just get mad, but I do this instead, or I know that I'm wrong. So I need to change my ways and just cool my jets for a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to him and then I bring up UFOs. And I bring up that the Pentagon admitted that this footage, gun camera
I saw
footage,
it.
You know, that the Pentagon admitted that, yeah, it was real. These are authentic UFOs. We don't know what they are. And you were not supposed to see this video at all. Just leaked through this organization called ATIP. So he's like, I don't know. I don't see none. I'm like, well, what about the... I'm like, well, what about... It says in the news. If I haven't seen it, I don't believe it. I need to see it for myself. So I'm like, oh, man. He's like, why would they want to come down here? I think we're pretty interesting, Story. Well, I don't... if they were looking at us from here... And then I asked him, like, what he's doing. And I couldn't have had him, first of all, as much as I felt like I'm cursed, this sucks, this pandemic sucks, it screwed my whole life up, I would not have had Tommy Chong.
Mm.
I wouldn't have had the podcast show because I wouldn't have all the time to invest into it. And I wouldn't have had a guest like Story Musgrave. And I asked him some questions that were prevalent to what was going on. And I was kind of like giving him like my misery, you know, I'm just venting to him, maybe get some empathy out of him and stuff. I was being, you know, cranky and complaining, whining. And he said, yep, me too. We're going through it too, but I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to reinventing myself. He's 84 years old. He's got a 10-year-old kid, right? He's like, all my speaking engagements are pretty much dried up. But, you know, I'm writing poetry. I'm painting, spending time outside with nature. I'm like, you are from a different cloth, my friend. You are from a different cloth, man. First of all, you strap yourself in that rocket. And I can't, dude, try getting me on a plane.
Man, I had a dream once. Scariest dream of my life, where all I'm doing is in a spaceship, and it's going up, and I'm looking down at Earth, and everyone's down there, and I'm up there. And I just remember feeling so lonely, like the loneliest ever. And I woke up, and I was like, I'm never going to space.
What scares you?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's you hit the nail on the head before, probably the fraud thing. That's a big one. And I think that, you know, people have to remind me all the time that it's silly because, I don't know, the people who believe in me let me know that I've got what it takes to do what I'm doing. But still, man, like we do a parent open house where I'm showing them how I teach, and I'm so worried that, oh, they're going to realize who I really am. But like, right. then I think about it, it's like, but who am I really? I have to remind myself every day that like all my goals, all my aspirations, they're in line with what I think they should be. So I don't know why I have this voice in my head. I don't know why I'm so worried about messing up and why I'm so insecure about these things, about maybe because it's the parents of children. And, you know, there's nothing more precious than your kids. So it's like, I just want them to have full faith in me and really believe that I'm doing the best I can by their kids' side, which I am. And more so now than ever. Dan, I got to tell you, a lot of bad things have happened. I can't go into detail, but like there are some, we've had some real downs during this, man. Some real downs where, you know, people I love disappointed me. People that I didn't expect came through for me in ways that would just make me cry. And we just had to fight tooth and nail to keep our business, keep Reed going, keep Camp Tuscaloosa going. Whew. And so in the end, I have to remind myself that no matter what, I'm not a fraud. Like, I just work my ass off all the time. I'm always working. And I'm always being a parent during all this. I set up an entire camp with a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old tagging along. Mm-hmm. Like it
but
was.
But they're never going to forget that.
No, I don't think they will either.
They're going to be. Remember that time when Daddy and Mom were home like forever, and it was like,
oh, dude,
we worked on the thing and we did the videos.
Yes, and not only that, man. At night, it was the first time we did movie night. So every night we've been watching Sandlot or Ghostbusters or, you know, all the Ninja Turtles, all the classics, you know. And they weren't like that before. They wouldn't sit in front of a TV. So it's like we're working all day, we're playing all day, and at night we can watch a movie together. The blessing with all of this has been I've had family time that I would have never had before. And it's been special. It's been very special.
I think that's the one thing, like I would have never. And I've heard this from a lot of interviews, you know, like the Rogans and people who do stand up and people who are just always traveling. They've never had this time to just sit this one out. They've always been moving, always have to drive, always got to fly, got to be here, got to be there.
Or even when you're with them, are you really with them or is your head
yeah.
with that next flight or that gig or that interview or whatever?
Yeah. So now this is like a really, it's eye-opening in so many ways. And I, as much as I am in pain from all this emotionally and just mentally from it, you have to accept there's that guy in my head that says, you know, nothing bad happens without a good, everything happens for a good reason. You know, and I think what we're going through, what the world is going through right now, what everything is going through, the payoff is going to be so worth it.
You think so?
I think so. I think so. And the fact that I can't see it is a positive indication that it's got to be. Because in the end, everybody wants it. It is what everybody wants.
Gosh,
and I think it might take, you know, do you believe in law of attraction and stuff like that? And focusing and just intent, you know, putting
yes.
your intent out.
Yes,
and
I do.
You know, for example, they believe if you focus enough and you have a lot of people focusing on something, you can actually change how machines work. And
really?
Just with the power of intention. And one of the things is the anniversary of 9/11, September 11, 2002. It was the one-year anniversary, and everyone was thinking 9/11. The whole country was thinking 9/11. Especially in New York. The lottery numbers that night, 9/11.
Really?
Yeah. You can look it up, and it was...
Ugh, I just got the chills from that one.
It's just one of those things where I think it's... And I'm having epiphanies as I'm talking to you right now, so that's why I'm stammering these words out, because it's just coming to me. Everyone is so scattered. It's like everyone's in a snow globe. Everyone's head is a snow globe, and it's just shook.
Yeah.
And it needs this so that, you know, my life is so messed up right now. All I want is this. And other people are going to be, my life is so messed up right now. All I want is this. And it's going to come to a point where people are just going to want the same thing. Everybody's just going to want the same thing. And that's just peace, love, and just to move on. Let's get happy now.
I hope so, man, because I am not seeing it. I am seeing quite the opposite.
I know. And it's scary. I've had to do a lot of things. Like, I've shaved my Facebook pages.
What do you mean?
You
got rid of some.
Yeah, I went down. I think it was necessary for my own self, for my own ego. I think everyone loves to have as many followers as they want because they want to be an influencer in some way. You ask any young kid, they want to be a YouTube influencer. You want to be a YouTube influencer. You want to have power over people. You want your words to affect people so that they follow your ideas. I want to be an influencer. I want to have 1,000 followers. What good is that going to do me? So I said, try to get it down to 150.
That's a big decrease.
Yeah. And then you realize all the fat that you're cutting off of this steak. It's just
like, what kind of fat are you cutting off? Are you cutting off just negativity fat? Are you people that you're jealous of? Like, what is it that you would cut?
I guess it's not so much who I'm cutting, but who I'm saving.
Oh, well said, Dan Morrow. Well said. And I feel like I might be on that list. So,
because I feel I have friends on Facebook. I don't know these guys. I really don't know this person.
Right. Yeah.
He can go. This one, I don't know. Okay. I don't like this one's posts. This, you know, and just chewing off the fat.
Yeah. Suddenly your feed is just filled with.
And then I'll go back to it like the next day and say, who else? It gets addicting now. Who else? I've gotten off of Twitter. I keep my Instagram as only a promotional thing. And my Facebook's only a promotional thing.
Yeah.
To promote the show and stuff. And YouTube, the same thing. But my comments are going to be off on it once I start doing that.
Yeah.
And I just got to stay away from the news. I used to watch news faithfully and really into politics, loved it. And then I just stopped because I felt better.
Yeah.
And this has caused me to watch the news again. And there's a saying that if you avoid politics, politics will find a way of.
I've never heard that one.
Getting you. I forget the exact words. If you
I get you though.
Refuse to accept politics, politics will find a way of forcing you to have to accept,
yeah,
to get into it. And I think I need to just focus on myself now. I can't worry about what's
the news
going on.
Dude, I used to be faithful until this happened. I went and scrolled on Facebook looking for God knows what, and on Instagram, dude, I deleted Instagram. I go on Facebook only when I see I've had up to like 20 notifications. I'm like, all right, now I'll see all this stuff. But like, it's so stupid. I'm a 37-year-old man posting something and then seeing how many people liked it versus not. It's like, it makes zero difference. And these last 3 months since I've like basically stayed off Facebook other than every now and then just to check things out, it's much nicer.
Mm-hmm.
It's much nicer.
I don't want to have to worry anymore. You know, I don't want to have to worry if I'm going to be canceled for something that's taken out of context or for just anything.
Yeah. Is it even worth it?
For anything. You know, I love the Bugs Bunny cartoons. Some people might have their own opinions about the Bugs Bunny cartoons. Now, just because I'm associated to having liked the Bugs Bunny cartoons, I am... You know, I could be canceled. Yeah, it gets that crazy.
It sure does.
It gets that crazy.
In the age of offendedness.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that also affected me because, like, what do I do now? You know, the rock and roll songs were sleazy rock and roll songs that, you know, if you put out the rock and roll songs now, it's, you know, the Me Too movement would be all over you, you know, for some reason. But you could still have that content in other songs. You know, pop, there's a lot of pop artists that can still get away with doing stuff like that. It's just a paranoia that we give ourselves. And I'm like,
that's too bad, because art, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's just so much, man. And it's, where do we go from here? What do we do? Who's going to be the savior? And what is that? What I've always wanted to put a good news network out there that's solely focused on good stuff. You know, Mike Rose,
I would love that for my students, like just to have it on, you know, something just good news. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I'm in the middle of a book right now that I think you would absolutely love.
What is it?
And it's a shame that I still say I read books, because I don't. It's just audiobooks.
I know. Isn't that weird? But what do you say? I listen to a book. That's weird too, right?
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It doesn't. It feels weird, right? I just say I read books too, even if I just listen to them.
And it is...
what genre are we talking?
Autobiography.
Okay.
Autobiography. And it's called The Good Neighbor. And it's all about Mr. Rogers.
Well, now you're talking my language, man.
I think you would love this book.
I definitely would if it's Mr. Rogers.
Download it. Get it on Audible. LeVar Burton, okay. Reading Rainbow. He narrates it.
Yeah. You're talking about Jordy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Did you see Tom Hanks?
No.
Okay. I thought it was really good. Yeah.
But I just, Mr. Rogers was... so pivotal in ways that I appreciate now, you know. I don't have COVID, but I'm just
an understanding.
I just talk and clear my throat. But Mr. Rogers had, if you go on YouTube and pull up some of his old videos, you'll just see how great he really was. You know, at the time when I was little, everybody was afraid of the Hulk. You know, the Hulk's going to get me in my dreams and stuff.
Incredible Hulk?
Lou Ferrigno, yeah.
He's scary.
That was
looking.
A big deal, man. Little kids were fifth grade, sixth grade, we were afraid of the Hulk.
Yeah. Lou Ferrigno is the man. You can't have a human do it. Now it's all computer animated, right. But Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno, man. And at the peak of the success, Mr. Rogers goes on the set of the Hulk and talks with Lou Ferrigno. And they show the makeup and the brows and the contacts and what he goes through and how he was teased as a kid because he was deaf. And it was so cool. And then another episode, he's got Margaret Hamilton, the original Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz. Uh-huh. And she's just a grandma. She's yeah. But she brings her costume. And Mr. Rogers helps her put the costume on and stuff. It was so cool. And if you read this book, the guy grew up a millionaire. His parents were really affluent in Pittsburgh. So,
you know what I love about him? First of all, I posted one of his quotes recently, which I think about all the time nowadays after what we've been through. And I'm just paraphrasing it, but he said that when he was upset at seeing all the madness on the news, he would go to his mom when he was scared, and his mom would say, "Look for the helpers. There are always people wanting to help." Man, that quote could make me cry at this point because it's so true. And what's so cool about him is that, like, yeah, he is a millionaire, and he has all these adults probably telling him what he should do.
He grew up a millionaire. He was a privileged kid. He was an only child, and his father was like a bigwig. You know, this big to do business guy in Pittsburgh. And he was associated with these companies and stuff. So he never had to worry about money. But Fred would always be upstairs and playing with puppets. And he had this sensitivity about him. And just, he learned to just make friends. And this book is so good. And it, what's so good about it is how every decision he made with the intent of putting the children, what they would think first.
And that's why he's always in the back of my mind. Dan, if I am ever feeling like I'm a fraud or whatever, that's what keeps me strong, is knowing that just like Rogers, I'm always doing what I feel is right for the kids. That's all I ever do, so I should not feel insecure about anything. Do I make mistakes? Like, do I always have the right answer? I'm a human, so no. But am I always trying my best to do what's right for the kids? Absolutely, and I can say that without question.
There was a segment where he was first hired to produce a show, a children's show, and it was a puppet show. And the writers, they were going on after the shoot 'em up shows and the cowboy shows, and so they have this puppet, and the puppet's saying, you know, is interacting with a woman actor. And she's like, oh, you look nice. Yeah, but I had a brother. You know, oh, where's he? Oh, somewhere in Cleveland now. You know, my parents lost him. It was some kind of joke. And it was a funny joke. And he was really upset about it. And he said, no, a child's worst fear is being abandoned. And they're going to feel for that child to the point where it would drive the writers crazy.
But he knew
everything
right.
He did. He would study, and he would read up on things, and he was a phenomenal musician. So he would get the best jazz musicians, and the whole concept of his show was absolutely phenomenal. And what I loved about him, what I really loved about him, and still try to emulate him, is not in a compassion, because I can lose my temper. Uh-huh. I can just go off the edge. His time
management. I knew you were going to say it. I was going to say it. Yeah, his pace is slow.
His time management. You know, I could sit on the couch and watch this man who has not only changed his clothes.
He's tied them shoes.
He's fed his fish.
Yes.
He's walked around. He's taken out his toys. He's put his toys back in 20 minutes.
He's just doing his chores.
He's done all this stuff. Exactly. And I even would write lists sometimes, little memos, little post-its, you know, think the way Mr. Rogers, how would he handle your day? And you'd get a little more done. When you think the way he thinks, but yeah. I really encourage
and
you.
Which, yeah, I will definitely read it. I'll make that my next
book.
It's
called The Good Neighbor.
Okay, next book I'm reading will be that one. Oh, what was I going to say about that? But no, but what he does, it's all meaningful. Everything that he does is meaningful and well thought out. I think a lot of times when I'm teaching, some things may just look like I'm naturally doing something, but there's a lot of thought that goes into everything. For sure. And a lot of it comes from years of doing it, you know?
You know what? I also don't think the wrestling has fully developed for you in a way. Like, I think what's going to happen is there's going to be this one kid that just can't connect with anyone. And all he loves is wrestling.
Well.
And he's going to find himself in the classroom with Mr. Sam. And that's just going to be one of those things to just snap him out and make him not afraid to be in school anymore. You know, not afraid.
I wish I had a teacher like that when I was a kid, man.
Well, I think some teachers are in there for the wrong intent.
Yeah.
And which is sad. And I could get flack for that, but.
No, it's true.
You've been there. You know the teachers. I know the teachers.
I know teachers who are in it for the summer vacation.
Exactly. When I would play in the bands, all these college girls would follow us. And I'd say, what are you in college for? I'm going to be a teacher. I said, let me guess, elementary ed. How'd you know? They all wanted elementary ed. They thought it'd be an easy gig.
Oh, boy.
Spring break, summer's off. But if you're doing it for that, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, these kids, I was a kid that just didn't get it.
Yeah.
So they'd put me out in the hallway to finish my work. Well, fourth grade, you know, that stays with you.
It sure does, man.
And
that's a teacher being lazy and giving up, just sending you out there.
Yeah.
That wouldn't, if you were ever in my class, that would not have happened.
Yes.
Away.
So it needs, because I didn't have daycare. I just went from kindergarten and then first grade. So kindergarten's cool. Hey, we have these cool desks. We can go out, go sit down. We got these little wooden sandpaper blocks, make music, have fun. And then first grade, I'm at this desk and I can't leave.
Yeah, and they're throwing some words at you and some letters you've never seen before.
Yeah, it was eye-opening and it made me realize I'd have more fun with my grandfather right now. You know, or I have more fun doing this.
It is kind of messed up how they twist it on you that. They give you school one way and then they give it to you the other way.
And another thing with Mr. Rogers, he once he got to do his show in Pittsburgh, he got to create the team that he wanted. He got the backing he wanted, financial backing he wanted. And everything was working the way he wanted. He loved jazz. So he'd get jazz players. And he'd set up a jazz band with three notable jazz players. I forget their names now because I don't know jazz. But Wynton Marsalis knows who these jazz people are. And for the longest time, the jazz players are like, what do we do? And Mr. Rogers is like, well, we're doing everything in one take. So when I have to go in town, they're going to have a camera on the model of the neighborhood. And you just vamp while I, you know, just play something, improv, while I go to the next set. All right. And at one point, it was like, I'm a great jazz player, man. What am I doing on a kiddie show? And Mr. Rogers said, well, it's for the kids and they deserve the best.
Yes. Yes. I never understood that frame of thought of people like, oh, doing a kid show. Like
can be beneath you in many ways. You know, you always see like people starting out in Hollywood or something, they got to be the clown or the mascot character or something.
Yeah, but then I think about what we did.
But if you're doing a legit
a show where you're really
kid show.
Yeah, something that they're learning from but also looking forward to and having a great time, I think it's a really cool art. Like some people might look at kid shows like, yeah, anyone can do that. That's easy. Not if it's a good kid show. You really have to put some thought into how you're going to get them entertained, how you're going to get them learning, because, I mean, honestly, you want that. You want the kids to learn if they're going to be sitting in front of the TV. Maybe not always. I mean, there's Ren and Stimpy and stuff like that, you know? But, like, there's a lot of thought that goes into it. I think it's a really important art. I really do. I mean, the kid shows you grow up on, they stick with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah, please. Yeah, it's called The Good Neighbor. It's really affecting me how I'm looking at my programming and who do I want it to be for and what do I want it to be. I think this podcast show might wind up being solely a music show where I'm bringing in music guests or talking, you know, where I can talk to someone like Bobby Rydell or Tommy Chong, you know, because one of the things about Tommy Chong was he discovered Michael Jackson.
That I did not know. That's a fun fact.
Did you listen to the show?
Not yet. I haven't listened to a podcast or news or anything since this whole thing started.
This is a good escapism show to listen to.
Okay. As long as it's all happy, then I will listen. Okay.
It's all happy.
It's got to be with Tommy Chong.
Yeah. And he was with a band called the Bobby Taylor Band, and they were a Motown band, and he was just a backing musician. And the prize, there was this high school contest, and Battle of the Bands, and the winner would open for Bobby Taylor. And it was the Jackson 5.
That's so crazy.
So Joe Jackson actually goes to Tommy Chong because Tommy looks more studied. He's got glasses on and his hair slicked back.
He looked
smarter. Ironically, because he plays the idiot with Jackson Chong.
Yeah, I know.
But he just looked really, really smart. And Tommy says, you know, I was the whitest looking guy there, so Joe Jackson went to me because he thought I would know more legal stuff. And the way he worded it was, the typical, we'll make you a star, but we're going to take everything.
Yeah.
And you know, it was. And that's what we did. And we made him a star, and they took everything. But the stories we were talking about, we covered the gamut. We talked.
I'll check it out tomorrow.
For about 20 minutes, just about the tango.
He dances tango?
Yeah, that was him back in the day.
Whoa.
Yeah.
With
the Bobby Taylor band.
That's Jung? Yeah. I've never seen his face without facial hair.
I know. But yeah, apparently when he was in prison, he learned how to tango. And he became fluent in tango. And he's got all these ideas on how he's going to save the world. And it was so fascinating.
That is shocking.
And then I think an hour in, we start talking deep, like God deep, universe deep. It's intense.
Dude, I got 5 acres to mow tomorrow. I know what I'm doing while I mow.
Oh, dude.
Okay.
Love it.
Yeah, no, so I got my work cut out. I'm going to listen to your show.
I do have to ask.
I'm going to read.
How'd you go from pro wrestling to a daycare?
Well, I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher. I always knew I wanted to be a wrestler, but during a latchkey program, I was doing like aftercare with the kids, and I actually got fired. It was out in the Florida heat, and I kept bringing the kids inside, and they were telling me not to, and I wasn't listening to my bosses, and they fired me. And the next day, my high school principal says, "Hey, Sam, you have a phone call from your boss?" And I was like, "What?" And I pick it up, and she says, "You know, we really want you back. All the parents are saying that they're going to drop their kids out of latchkey unless we bring you back, yada, yada." So I said, "Wow, okay, sure, yeah, I'll come back." And man, when I arrived, and just this sea of kids running up to me, "Sam!" And I was just, and then they're all walking with me all excited to the playground because they're happy I'm back. Like, that was the moment where I was like, well, if this wrestling thing doesn't work out, maybe I'll work with kids. I don't know.
See, right there, it's like, where do I go from here? I don't see the future. I can't figure out where I'm going to go from here. It looks bleak. I have no certainty what's going to happen. Then you get the call.
Yeah.
When you played it out and connected all the dots, it all made sense. But at that time, you didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah. I feel lucky. I don't know. I feel very lucky that the dots have aligned themselves the way they have.
And they're going to continue to. I think this is the start of something.
I hope so, man. We talked about doing a project or something one of these days.
Listen to this friggin' Mr. Rogers book.
Yeah.
I can't believe
I might actually read the book.
A rock singer and a pro wrestler have just spent the last end of the show talking about Mr. Rogers.
There's nothing more rock and roll.
Remember the rumor that he was a sniper?
Oh, man.
Did you ever hear the rumor that
I've heard a few upsetting rumors.
Vietnam, like
that one I didn't hear. That's actually a cooler one than some of the others.
One of the rumors was he would always wear the sweater because it covered all his tattoos the war. Because he was like this when you read this book.
No one believed he could be like that all the time.
Exactly.
He had to have something else.
When you read this book, you realize, no, he was Mr. Rogers.
That's the thing. 24/7. He really was Mr. Rogers 24/7. It's crazy. Yeah. He set a high bar for us. He set a high bar.
He did. I want you to get that book.
100%.
And just be inspired by it. Because I thought of you the whole time.
Really? Oh, man, that's cool.
I'm still reading it. I'm still in the middle of the book.
Use Audible?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's worth the money. Just go buy it.
Oh, yeah. I love to read, man. And Mr. Rogers. I'm sold. You don't have to sell me anymore.
Get it.
Yeah.
And all it's doing for me is fueling, okay, how can I be more creative? What content can I create? Because now is the first time in our lives that not only are we going through this, and like I said, what would we go through this if we didn't have the internet? But we have the internet, and what does that mean? It means we have a radio station, a recording studio, a television studio, and a television channel with YouTube and Spotify and all this.
And a couple of brilliant minds.
How can you not make something? You know, it's a level playing field. You don't need to go. And even the established artists right now. Last book I just read was 50 Cent's book.
The musician, the rapper? He's been shot a few times, right?
He's got a book. His book is the last book I read. I'll go back and forth from books. I'll download.
You stick from biographies? You like
Yeah, especially if they're reading it. because 50 Cent's reading it. I'm mowing the lawn with 50 Cent.
Oh, that's cool. Tell him his story.
Yeah.
That is cool.
It's called Hustle Harder, Hustle Smarter. And that's one of these books. It's the best business book I've ever heard in my life.
50 Cent's book?
From 50 Cent. It's the best business book I've ever heard.
All right. I'm shocked.
And he talks about how he had to learn, you know, 50 Cent got him far and successful. But Curtis Jackson needs to take that and do something with it. And it's no different. The Rock.
Oh, man.
Got here. But now Dwayne Johnson has to take it from here.
Yeah, talk about the master of doing that.
Like, yeah.
People want him to be president.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you remember when he first started out? Yeah.
He would get it. He would win.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, the way he talks. People love The Rock. Mm-hmm. They love him. Do you remember when he first started out? Did you ever see him as Rocky Maivia?
I may have seen the pictures.
Dude.
I know when he had the hair and the sideburns.
Oh, and the tassels, man. The blue and white tassels. Oh, it's worth checking out. And everyone's saying, Rocky sucks. Hey, talk about that. That's the beginning of the dot. When people saying Rocky sucks, that was the dot that started it all. Because he ran with Rocky sucks. And then he turned heel. And, man, the rest is history.
Yeah. God. Good for him. And really, good for him, because there's all those other wrestlers out there that watch it. If you see an interview with him or a documentary like a True Hollywood Story of him, they'll interview some of the wrestlers he played with during the day or he worked with during the day. And they all said, you know, God bless him, because he was able to do something they couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, he got out of it. He was able
to. No more bumps, no more bruises.
Just... No, not only that, but. You know, I know the hardest thing, especially with WWE, is keeping your identity.
Yeah, and even more so to transcend into something else. I mean, mm-hmm. that is hard.
Yeah.
So many people have tried it. Undertaker tried it. Hulk Hogan, I mean, tried it to some degree.
And just finding what, you know, he had to do a few movies that were stupid in order to get the movies that he
wanted.
Some
of those who started were rough. But now... Now he's starring
in
every
action. And now you'll see everyone. You'll see all the wrestlers do a movie in a ballet dress or something. You know, trying to be
funny.
Being
a tooth fairy or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but there's only one Rock, man.
No, God bless him, man. And God bless you. I think this is still, even if two people listen to this show and it's me and you.
I'm going to enjoy the crap out of that.
I think people are going to come back to this show because it's going to be the historical moment. This, no, you got to listen to the first show. That's when the seed was planted.
Yeah.
For what? I have no freaking idea.
Just keep going down that list, man. Keep bringing them on. I'm going to start listening. I serious, it's nothing against you. I don't listen to Joe Rogan. I seriously have just stayed away from the world for a few months, but I'm back.
If I can recommend some, I recommend Can't Hurt Me from David Goggins.
That's the military guy, right?
Yeah.
The guy who like lost all the weight, really motivating.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
It's one of those things.
He's in SEAL training. He's in buds, and he breaks his legs, and he just finds a way to tape them and keep running.
Oh my god!
It's sick. The book should actually be called "Fail to Prepare, Prepare to Fail," because he does these grueling marathons and stuff, and he'll forget water, or he'll just do stupid shit. Like he'll just have the wrong bike when he. He should have had this cool bike, this nice 10-speed or something. He's going with a mountain bike. But he's amazing. And it's just how to set your mind.
Which book do I read first, Rogers or Dodgers?
Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
Because that's going to psych you up. And Goggins will get you the fuel. And then listen to 50 Cent to figure out what to do with the business.
Yes.
But the Rogers is a big deal.
Yeah. Didn't expect to talk about it, but I'm so glad we did, brother.
No, I'm glad too. I'm really glad. It's good to finally have you here. I don't know the next time I will see you, but I hope it is under even more better circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, where you're not so far away from me in the other room, and we can have some good talk. And what happened? We had a dinner one night, and you got
sick. Dude. I was actually going to start off this show because I was going to say the last time you saw me, I was a sweaty mess. What happened? I just got really sick, dude.
It just hit you.
I mean, it was hitting me throughout the day. No, it was throughout the day where I was like, oh, I'm not feeling well. God, Lisa, I don't know if I can do this, but nah, I got to hang out with Dan Mara. I don't care. Like, they're so cool. Let's just go. I sat down in that restaurant and boom. Dude, I was so embarrassed. And then other friends who I knew were like in the restaurant, they're coming up to our table. I'm having anxiety and like sweating profusely. It was a bad moment for Mr. Sam in that moment.
It just wasn't meant to be right there.
Yeah. Hey, this is our comeback. This is much better.
This was.
Not a single drop of sweat.
Not at all. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please be sure to tell your friends about the show. You can find The Dan Mara Show on Anchor FM, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other listening platforms where podcasts are heard. You can also, we will be on YouTube soon. Look for us there. And for live shows, videos, and updates on all facets of me, go to my personal website, danmaro.com. That's danmaro.com. Sam Seitel, what can we expect from you in the up and coming months?
Oh, man, I don't know. Like, do I do Pillars of Hamilton again? Do I do something else? Do I continue with? I really don't know. So I can't really plug anything other than my camp, my school, because all my energy is in that right now. So if you have a kid at home and you want them to be a kid again, there's no better place than that, my camp, Camp Tuscaloosa.
That's one for the books. And we will see you next time.